You've just entered the law offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker. If you've come for actual legal advice, you need to turn right around, honey. You need to get out of here, because you ain't going to get none of that. They quibble, and they squabble, and they bicker. But if you want to hear meaningless opinions, this is the right place. They got plenty of that. Stuff that makes no sense at all. They go off on tangents. It's crazy talk. If that's your thing, keep listening. They'll keep talking.
Welcome back to the Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker on this September 9th, 2020, where we have obtained our 12th client, Marriage and Glue Sniffing. Essentially, the main point of this topic is really to get into the concept of marriage and its worth and, you know, how it kind of began and has continued through the eons and how it could potentially result in glue sniffing and certain people, if they're not handling it well, or if it makes them actually have a better marriage if they're glue sniffing together. I mean, what's the old saying? Those that sniff glue together stay together?
Like glue. Stick together like glue.
Right.
When they're not, I think it's that more a saying. Metaphor of sniffing the glue that binds the relationship together.
Okay.
Ah, we didn't even think of that, how it all ties together when we came up with the client.
I think it's like, well, it becomes what kind of glue is the best for keeping your marriage together, though?
Right. Is it Elmer's? Is it
airplane
modeling
glue? Yeah, modeling
glue. It might be the glue that they use to stick PVC pipe together.
Is it true that maybe it's something that for a lot of people seems like a great idea at the time, but there's a lot of regrets later on down the road? So it's for some people.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, in the United States, we've gotten to the point where over 50% of marriages end in divorce. The question is, you know, how many new marriages, like say the first marriage is like the trial period where they're learning whether they like the concept or not. But then the second marriage, they stick it out. You know?
The statistics are because some of my clients are actual lawyers and mostly in family law.
Yeah,
it gets worse as it goes on. The first marriage is 50%. Uh-huh. Second marriage is like 60-70. Third marriage, I don't know, they kill each other. Fourth marriage, you know.
They're huffing glue.
They're huffing. So the first marriage is your best shot. The second marriage generally doesn't work out.
That
makes sense because they weren't that good at marriage in the first place. And so like they're not going to get better at it, maybe.
I don't know. Maybe they could get better at it, but maybe it's more disposable the second time around. In other words, the first one was supposed to be for life, and then you learn through the immediate heartbreak and hell that you may have gone through that, all right, well, I guess it's not for life. So the next one is, we'll see how it goes.
Roll the dice again. Let's see.
And the third one is the sniffing glue one. That's the sniffing glue marriage is the third. But it's like in our day and age, do we need marriage? Is it still something that's important? I mean, it was originally created, I think, to ensure that you had two people together to take care of the children who are necessary for keeping everybody alive at some point too. You know, because eventually they would get older and take care of their parents who didn't have a community or social services to help them. All you had was your immediate family members to keep you going through it. So understandable.
I kind of feel like that's kind of the society we're heading towards right now.
You think we're heading back to prehistoric periods?
I'm saying I'm glad I have four kids and I'm sort of grooming each one of their careers so that at a certain point I'm going to go, hey, I took care of you. Now it's your turn.
So is this like a Gen X thing or is this, something that other generations would be planning for as well? You think it's just more of our...
I think they've always done that. People had kids. That was part of it. Like, I want someone to look after me when I'm old.
Yeah.
It's nice to have kids.
Well, Greg, as the non-married person in the group, was there a deliberate choice of yours to not get married and just sniff glue all the time? Or was it just to not get married?
Yeah, I heard the song Sniffing Glue, and I never wanted to get married, but luckily for me, not many women were really trying to change my opinion about it, so it was quite easy to stay unmarried. I'm not much of a catch, if you will. So it wasn't like it ever even came up. I don't think I ever dated a woman who even talked about marriage.
You know, having been to Walmart, I would say that anybody could be somebody's catch.
Yeah, I was gonna say, Greg, I think you're selling yourself a little short.
A lot short, actually.
With a lot of women, they marry people that are terrible.
They do. Way worse than them, apparently.
I bet you were never like a wife beater or an abuser.
I was never given the chance, Matt. All I wanted was an opportunity. I never had a wife.
You wanted an opportunity to beat on a wife?
I might have been a great wife beater, but I just don't know.
Did you at least try on the shirt to see if it fit you?
Yeah. I've never worn one of those shirts because I always had man boobs, and they look very unflattering in that.
Oh, no. That's when they're at their best. That's when they really, truly realize, like, a wife beater on some worked out 24-year-old boy.
Looks great.
Put a wife beater on some dude. It's got a chicken wing stain and the man boobs and then the sweat right here. That's what you're looking for.
And that's who hangs out at Walmart that you're talking about.
Yeah. And is it like the plain white t-shirt wife beater, or is it like the ribbed one, like thermal underwear type of wife beater?
Oh, no, we're going, we got to go straight thermal underwear tank top.
Yeah.
Which is generally supposed to be skin tight. It should be the ribbed tank top because you wear it under a shirt primarily to hide your nipples if you're wearing a white dress shirt. That's the only time I ever wore one.
I think Greg is fine with showing his nipples.
Yeah.
It could be.
Yeah, I think he would.
I have no shame about sharing my grotesque body with the world because it's comfortable. But
you never had the opportunity to use the shirt in that moment.
Way, yeah.
Okay.
Like it's necessary. You need that uniform.
It's like, hold on a second. Hold on, honey. I got to get my shirt on before I beat you. Anyway, and by the way, anybody listening, this is not something we advocate in any stretch of the imagination. We are joking.
But we are joking.
We understand
about
that domestic abuse
topic.
Is a horrible thing. It's very serious. And none of us would do something like that intentionally. Anyway.
No, but we are joking about it because we're terrible.
Whoa. We got to talk about intentional.
Yes.
Glad somebody caught that. That was a little throw in.
I gave you the benefit of the doubt and pretended I didn't hear it.
Anyway, so Greg, you never got married because you said that woman wanted, or did you try to even ask a woman to marry you?
No, I never wanted to. Like I said, I never wanted to get married. And
what are your reasons? What are your reasons for not ever asking a woman to marry you?
I hate to say it's my. I had really good parents.
That's something I hate to say. Yeah,
they were very. No, I mean, that was the rest of the part I hate to say. Oh. But I had a very domineering mother and a very passive father. Because I'm a male, I identify with my father. So I literally thought getting married means you never get to do what you want ever again in your life. That, subconsciously, I just thought, getting married, I'll never have a say in anything. I'll have to do all this crap I don't want to do, never get to do what I want to do. And I'll basically be a slave to someone the rest of my life.
Did you always date domineering women?
No. And luckily, I mean, I've definitely been attracted to that, like Catwoman and Batman. I thought was really hot. So in fiction, I think that's
Catwoman?
Sexy. No, I say I find her attractive, but
Maybe he did date her.
I wish, God.
After a good night of sniffing glue.
And I'm talking about Julie Newmar, of course. And
what, not Eartha
but
Kitt?
She was pretty hot, but Julie Newmar, man. Ooh,
but not Halle Berry, not Michelle Pfeiffer.
Halle
Berry catgirl. No.
See, she was pretty beautiful in that, but I just, just never wanted to. I'm also pretty selfish. I think I like being alone. And I've dated women for years and lived with them. You know, almost getting a little test run for what marriage is like, living with someone. And I'm just too selfish. I just always want to do what I want to do whenever I want to do it.
So how long was the longest you cohabitated with a female?
About almost 3 years, I think it was.
Wow.
2 to 3 years, something like that.
That's not a short amount of time.
And yeah, what age were you at that time?
30. One was like late 30s. One was maybe early 40s, somewhere around there.
So when you hit like the 2-year mark, aren't you start kind of being interested in the idea of being married? Were they bringing it? Were they broaching it all with you at that point?
I think our relationships were already crumbling at that point.
Oh, okay.
But we lived together, and it was the kind of relationship where we really liked each other. It just, you know, that it wasn't like we fought all the time, or we started hating each other. We ended up being really good friends. It just we realized we weren't in love with each other, you know, like passionate love anymore. So we totally, one of my girlfriends and me, we broke up and still lived in the same house for a couple months before she moved to where she was moving.
So what were her worst habits that made you like, oh, I could never.
None. She was amazing. She was a great girlfriend. I still adore her. I still am friends with her. And she was actually a great roommate. She liked her alone time. It wasn't like she was bothering me all the time. Like, hey, do this with me. She was a total loner herself. I could have always just said, hey, Pam, I don't really feel like doing this. I just want to go in my room and read a comic or something. She'd totally be like, fine, yeah.
So you had no faults with her. So why'd you guys break up?
Right.
You know that happens sometimes. I don't know.
That sounds fantastic.
You never fall out of love?
I tell the woman in my life, you know what? I'm just going to go in my room and read a comic book. I don't know what you're doing. And she went, yeah, that's cool. That's awesome.
That doesn't happen with you. Well, like,
but you said you really, really love this woman, though.
I was the kind of emotional cripple. I don't think I was capable of really loving someone at that point. Uh-huh. I don't think until my mid-40s I finally figured out, oh, this is what love is supposed to feel like.
Oh,
what?
I don't know if love is anything, really.
I know, it's crazy. That's why I'm asexual.
I was going to say, was it a lack of sexual attraction? I mean, was it like...
Not at first, but I don't know if you guys have ever been with people where it just gets... You kind of just stop having sex because it just gets cool.
We're married,
even though
Greg.
We still... Oh, yeah. You guys know. All my married friends.
There are lulls here and there.
Yeah. I know, but we were only together for like a year or two, and it already started getting like, whatever. I'm going to just go to sleep tonight, honey. You know, like...
So you didn't even want to go through the motions anymore?
It just became, you know, I don't know why that happens. That's what really was one of the things that made me really get down on just romance, how it just dies like that. And you don't even know why. It's just such a sad thing. Like, I love this person. They're great. They're attractive. I still think they're beautiful. Uh-huh. And yet why? Because now that we're living together, why is it all boring now? And we're just like,
Well, did you try anything to make it more exciting?
I didn't.
Like an Antifa outfit and she was dressed up like a cop or something?
We didn't have Antifa back then, Matt. That's a new terrorist group that has just infiltrated America in the past few years.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought maybe that would be something.
We had Al-Qaeda back then. I could have been an Al-Qaeda and she could have been a soldier in the American Army. It could have been hot.
Okay, but you just never tried it, though.
No, yeah.
So okay, I never would have either. I don't do dress up whatsoever. I don't do anything.
Was it mostly one of these things where no one knew when to initiate it, and so then it just became awkward? Like you'd have needs, and then you didn't want to impose on her, or maybe she did, and you were reading a comic book, and then it just got awkward like that.
I think that's what happens in relationships when the sex dies down. There's just always some reason. Oh, I didn't think you wanted to. I don't want to bother you. Like. It's somehow those reasons come up when you're really hot for someone. Those reasons never come up because they're not there. You really, both of you are attracted to each other and you want to tear each other's clothes off most of the time.
So you're expecting like a long-term relationship is supposed to be like that.
It would be
decades.
Nice. It would be nice. I'm not saying this.
Decades of hot passion every day.
Wouldn't the world be nice though?
No work gets done at all. All you're doing is you're just humping like rat. No, that's all you'd be doing is dealing with
all the time.
The after effects of ultimate passion, which is like rashes and rug burns. And, you know.
You're maybe having sex a little rougher than I'm used to.
Things being tossed off the kitchen table.
Scratch marks on your back. And
it's like you would never clean up the house because all you're doing is having sex. Is that like the concept of marriage that you were expecting, Greg? I think maybe your expectations might have been a little too high for marriage.
Well, like I'm saying, that's just one aspect of things that's a little sad to me about staying together with someone. But really, it's just that I like being alone. I like not having to answer to anyone.
But if she felt the same way, right? If she felt the same way that you did.
There were still things that sometimes she wants to do something, and I'm like, it still happened where, even though there were little things, I'm just that selfish.
So basically, what you're saying is autonomy for you is much more important than security of having somebody there with you. That you
yeah,
because really like.
I have a tiny heart and I don't really care. I like being alone.
Okay.
I'm not much. Yeah, I don't have much capacity to love someone.
But you know, your girlfriend, your wife, whomever, is always going to have some idea that you know, let's go do a picnic or let's visit my parents, or they're always going to have kind of off the wall dumb ideas and
visit their parents. That's off the wall. What a stupid idea. Picnic, just, you crazy person.
What kind of halfway?
I'm just being honest. And
like that you think a picnic is an off the wall idea.
It kind of is.
Crazy.
I mean, in Florida, let's be honest. Who wants to picnic in Florida? But my point is that there's always, whether it's picnics or visiting the parents or whatever, crafting, or let's go to one of those places where we get drunk and paint a picture together. Whatever. There's going to be something that she wants to do that you are like, this sounds terrible. A long-term relationship is really boiling down to which of those things are you going to object to and say no, knowing that there's going to be some blowback. And which of those things are you just going to suck it up and go, all right, I guess we're going to go get drunk and paint something. I can accept that.
Well, that makes you go, so what are the benefits then of going along with those off-the-wall ideas that you don't want to do? What makes marriage positive for you enough to put up with that lack of autonomy, that lack of wanting to do those uninteresting things?
You know, having been married for 29 years as of about a month ago now.
Oh, happy anniversary.
Thanks.
Sure.
You know, if you can work it out, and it does take work, it's not easy. If you can work it out, your significant other, whether that's your wife or whatever, because we can talk about whether the institution and signing documents of marriage is important, but whatever, the person that you're sharing your life with, that you may or may not have kids with, becomes your best friend. And like many best friends, you don't agree on everything, but you agree on the important stuff. And it's nice to have somebody in a relationship, somebody that you can kind of always count on, somebody that no matter how weird your shit got or how whatever bad day you were having, you have somebody you can go and talk to, and you know that they actually give a shit about what you're going through. That's not always true with friends, you know what I mean? It's like somebody calls you up and they're like, oh, I had a bad day, and you're like, I got other shit to do. The thing about a long-term relationship,
talk to your therapist.
Yeah, the thing about a long-term relationship is you have that agreement, and you have that from her and she has that from you. You dump on her to some degree about whatever the bad day at the office or, you know, whatever the hell it is. And, you know, she comes to you and she's got some controversy of her own. And you may think this is dumb, but you know what? You know, like as a currency, you know what? She's going to have to listen to my dumb shit at some point. So I'm going to listen to this dumb shit and pretend to care. And because I know that at a certain point, she's going to listen to my dumb shit and pretend to care. And that's what makes it work.
Holly, if you are listening, he cares about everything that you say.
Oh, she does know that. But she also, if she was listening, and she may be, I don't know because I'm loud, she knows that that's true. She knows that I'd come home and tell her some dumb stuff about whatever I went through, and she's like, okay. Yeah, that's really terrible what happened at the office.
Brendan, I just wish that this was your vows. Honey, I'm going to listen to all your dumb shit. Just knowing that you'll listen to my dumb shit, you may now kiss the bride.
I'm telling you, those would be honest vows.
Yes, they would. I think it is. I do miss that. I miss having someone just, and even the good things, like I've dated women who have like totally weird senses of humor, like I do, where there's certain things in a day I'm like, oh my god, she's the only person I know who would appreciate this, and I can't wait to get home to tell it to her. And so I still am friends with a lot of my exes, and sometimes I'll call them, but it's not the same. The next day I might be like, oh, this just happened. And they'll laugh because we do have similar senses of humor. But I do miss that about having a girlfriend.
Well, maybe you could get all of your exes together to move in with you, Greg. And then
like a polygamous thing?
No, because you're not married to him, right? So you could get all of them to live with you so that you could have those various different aspects that you prefer about them and just use them for that part, right?
And then like a quiet room. So the ones that I don't like, if they're the aspects I don't like, then get in the room. I don't like that aspect about you. So you be quiet now. Yeah, man, I'm going to run this by all my exes and see what they think.
I want you to actually do that, and we'll do an episode on what actually was the result of this particular request.
That would be a reality show for 5 seasons. That would be great.
I really, really, from my experience with women and raising 2 daughters, a group of women in a room or in a house together, unless there's some God authority that dictates they do this, it's going to turn out bad.
Are you going to be that God authority?
Mm-mm.
You don't want to be that one.
Are you drinking cough syrup? Brendan, what is that little tiny bottle you're drinking out of?
He's in Florida. That's what they do.
Cough syrup?
Oh, he's getting cross.
It's an energy drink. Oh, this is because we're boring him, Greg.
No, it's because it's almost 10 o'clock at night, and I put in like 9 hours starting at 7. So
I was late today coming to the office.
So you
want to
be up until like 2 in the morning? Is that it?
Nah.
Do the 12-hour energy drink at 9 o'clock at night?
I've perfected what I like to call the coffee nap. And that is where you like drink a cup of coffee or some other caffeine thing, and there is a certain spike, and then there's a little bit of a crash, and at that crash you go to sleep. You wake up about 2 hours later.
After having not get any sleep the night before either.
I work for myself, so I napping is a big part of my life.
So you're doing the Thomas Edison thing.
Kinda.
Thomas Edison was like very well known for cat naps. He felt that sleep was a waste of invention time, and so he would just take cat naps here and there as opposed to sleeping through a night. And I guess that's how he was able to invent the light bulb and the motion picture. And
that and stealing the idea from Tesla. But
yeah, and crushing unions.
Well, it takes work to figure out how to crush a union.
It's true.
You got to work out a strategy.
Especially Tesla. Strategy. He went after Tesla because of the bad haircut. But anyway.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, the what is it called? I may be getting this wrong. Polyphasic, I think, sleep thing. There's something to be said for that in terms of, I get up at a certain point. Now, I don't do it because I'm inventing the light bulb. I do it because I have guys overseas that, for me, 2 o'clock in the morning is mid-afternoon for them, So having that kind of schedule, living in kind of this post-industrial world, kind of makes sense, and it doesn't work unless you take naps. You're the 8 hours of sleep, and you go to bed when it gets dark, and you get up in the morning. Works for farmers, and it works for people who have corporate jobs. So we've talked about Greg, who's never been married.
Yes,
we've talked a little bit about me, who's been married to one woman for 29 years.
Yeah,
let's talk about you, Matt. Let's shine the light on your marriage experience.
Well, after my first marriage went bust, and I could only really blame myself for the most part of that happening, I had decided I was never going to get married again. And I was like, I tried it the one time, and it didn't really work out, and I wasn't really a fan of the ending of it. And I'm like, I don't know if I really want to go through that again.
For our listening audience, how old were you when you got divorced?
I'm trying to remember how old I was when I got married. So when I got married, I think I was 28.
Mm-hmm.
And so the marriage was about, I think we were officially divorced 10 years later, so I would have been like 38. But it was kind of crumbling a couple of years before the actual divorce. But yeah, it was like 2004, I think, when we were officially divorced. And then, was it 2005, maybe? It was like the end of 2004, somewhere in 2005. We had 3 kids together, and so I'd given her custody of the kids because I didn't want there to be a huge amount of animosity in that. And then she wanted to move cross country, and so I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'm moving cross country too. So we actually drove cross country together, you know, in the throes of the divorce that was going to be happening. And actually, it was a pretty good trip. We got along pretty well. And we made some agreements, which was that once we were separated, that we would not say anything bad about each other to the kids or to other people, because we realized that that would probably keep us having a better relationship as we were going to have to raise the kids for the next 17 years, you know. And so, and for the most part, I think I was pretty good about that. I can't say the same for her. I don't know if she said bad things about me to other people. I would imagine she might have, because she was the one who initiated the divorce and the one.
For what it's worth, your wife never said a bad thing about you to me.
Okay, well that's good. You know, I
mean, nor to me.
Yes, because I don't think she knows who you are, Greg.
No, because she's never said a bad word about you to me.
Makes it quite easy. Anyway, and we still actually have a pretty good relationship in terms of communication. We still talk, you know, every week or two.
Matt, can I just interrupt for a second? Could sure. I suggest that for the ratings of our show, it would be quite a scoop if after all these years, if tonight you did say something bad about your wife, ex-wife, for the first time ever, and on air, imagine the ratings we'd get.
I don't know that that would give us great ratings here in the middle of the broadcast, but the only thing is talking about where Brendan was talking about you know, the wife listening to the dumb shit you have to say. I did learn at a certain point that I would talk to her, and if she was doing something else, she would do a lot of nodding and uh-huhing. And so I used to test it out by then talking about something ridiculous to see if she was paying attention. And most of the time, she just didn't realize that I was making shit up. And so it was like she was definitely not listening to me at all.
Hey, honey, you know, I rode a more, unicorn today.
But it was something like that. It would have been that ridiculous. But it made it funny because she would realize it and then laugh about it. So anyway, but for the most part, you know, we probably, to be honest, shouldn't have gotten married to begin with, you know. Neither one of us, we actually didn't really date before we got married. It was one of those things where I pursued her, but she was actually across country. I knew her because we had a working relation before, and I was like thinking, you know, who's somebody that if I was interested in getting married to, who would it be? I went, oh, I think I want to marry her. And so I basically talked her into it. We didn't even actually date. You know, I think we had like maybe one official date before we got married. And then, you know, the fact is that we were together for a long time. It was, like I said, about a decade, you know, based upon that, which is as good as any other people who have, as many other people have.
It's not bad at all.
Who spent years together, you know?
Yeah. You mentioned that she was the one that initiated the divorce. What, if you want to talk about it, I'm not saying
you want me to talk about my horrible character flaws. Is that what
you're yes, talking about? I would actually.
You could just lump it into, you know, one big general thing. You know, I mean, 29 years of marriage, I would be lying to both of you if I told you it was just smooth sailing and we were just like rainbows and unicorns the entire time. So I'm happy to talk about the flaws that have brought us close to that brink.
But well, anyway, I'm assuming, because one person told me that my ex-wife had called me a narcissist at one point, which, you know, certain character traits of mine definitely lend themselves to that. I can't disagree with that. But, you know, at the time when she said she wanted to get divorced, I actually thought our marriage was going well. And so, obviously, I was incredibly clueless, and perhaps I was, like, heavily narcissistic if I couldn't see bad things were happening. Right, if I couldn't see that there was something bad going on in the relationship.
Interesting. So it took you by surprise completely?
For the most part, I didn't know it was coming. You know? Well, and I was like, so I was kind of stunned for a few days, and I had to figure out a way to make it okay. And the way I made it okay was just thinking bad things about her and reasons why she would be okay to be gone with her. Because, you know, we did counseling, and that, I think, worked because it helped us actually get into better communication with each other. It didn't necessarily solve whatever it was she needed solved with me. I don't think there was anything I could do at that point once she made up her mind that could make her think that I could become a better person at all. And honestly, you know, I didn't really know what I was doing wrong. I think she told me, but then it just didn't sink in. And so, you know, basically for many years after that, I'm like sitting around going, all right, so why am I a horrible person? What was it that I did that caused a break, caused our family to break up, you know? And I think part of it was temper, because I did have a bit of a volatile temper and could raise my voice relatively quickly on certain things. I can be a selfish individual, you know, don't necessarily think beyond that. And I think after we had our first kid, I became more of a responsible person. But prior to that, I wasn't like really that responsible of an individual. You know, I was, even though I was in my late 20s, I was still kind of a crappy human being. Anyway, not that I'm much better now. Anyway, you know, my fulfilling my selfish desires by doing a podcast when I could be doing something with my wife right now, right? Anyway.
Oh, I didn't really mean for this to turn into that, dude. but what's interesting...
Well, what did you mean, Brendan? What did you want to get from this? What did you want to hear?
Honestly, I was genuinely interested, and here's why.
Because you're planning on marrying Greg?
I didn't want to talk about that, but since you brought it up...
I could see the signs over the past few weeks.
You know,
he leers down at you.
After he said he wanted to move down here and learn philosophy, I thought, maybe.
Yeah, Plato was good at that kind of philosophy.
Those platonic relationships?
Yes, platonic.
But you know, for me, you know, honestly, you know, obviously our relationship has, you know, any relationship has its ups and downs. And for us, a lot of times, because Holly has, you know, my wife has never like definitively said, but sort of, you know, mentioned things and suggested heavily that that might be the best way to go. And
so that what might be the best way to go?
Divorce.
Oh, okay. She's mentioned you because you've been less than kind. Okay.
Yeah. Now, for me, it wasn't that I was narcissistic. I don't know that she would have put it in those terms. But
to be honest, I can't say that my ex ever said that about me. I'm just saying that somebody else said that she said it. So I just want to make that clear. That
fair
she
enough.
Never said it to me, right?
Fair enough. Yeah. What? And this is kind of goes back to why I was sort of like suggesting Greg had something good going on. You know, my wife is very social and very empathetic and very much the life of any party she walks into. And I'm not.
You seem like such a happy-go-lucky guy.
I know. It's weird. So, and, you know, that obviously reflects itself not just outside of...
Greg, did you just, like, fall over and fart really loudly?
I didn't fart. It was a car. A car with a bad muffler.
It's like, first your camera went askew, and then that noise happened. Thought, oh no, I've got to get to Greg's house. He's dying.
I've fallen and I can't get up, and I'm farting too, and I can't stop farting.
It's just like one of those bodies that have been pulled out of a river. That's
okay. Let's go back to Brendan.
I've totally lost my train of thought. Zippy,
you were talking
Zippy
about
the pinhead, maybe... can you pull your head up just a little bit so I can see the top here? Thank you. All right.
You were talking about crises in your marriage where your wife had brought up the D word.
His head looks like the thing that you buff a shoe on.
For our listening audience who can't see. So, yeah, so I became more aloof. More withdrawn. I don't know that I was ever not withdrawn.
And but where anyway, in the 29 years did that happen? Was that about the 15-year mark or so? Or
ish.
Oh, okay.
I can't say it took me by surprise. You know, like when she made these originations, you know, told me these things, I was like, yeah, I mean, no, I get that. And, you know, and I decided at that point that, you know, those character traits weren't exactly, I wasn't necessarily proud of them, or I didn't think that they were ideal. I didn't know how much of that I could change, you know, how much a person can, how much of their person's basic personality can change is obviously up for all kinds of debate, which would be a whole nother show. But I tried, you know, I tried to be more
mindful.
I tried
effusive. I want to say when. Show us how you're effusive, Brendan.
Well, you know, like if, as an example, she would say, oh, I found this thing that, whatever. And I would go, you know, oh my God, that's amazing. I'm so glad you did it. As opposed to saying, all right, good. Glad that happened.
So basically you traded that statement with being insincere. So you
maybe you see, we ought to be a little insincere in a marriage.
That's an excellent point, Matt. And I certainly struggled with how much is the dividing line between just being a complete phony and just being present and acknowledging something that someone you love, it's important to that person, and just acknowledging that.
Right. I think there's a switch that has to be flipped in our minds, which makes us go, I actually believe what I'm saying now, but I think we have to fake it for a while till we finally get to that point where we actually do believe it and we actually are sincere in our compliments.
I think that more importantly, there's an observation of, you know, from a software perspective, setting the default on I don't give a shit, whatever, to let me listen, and then I will be selective about what I think is great. Because I don't, you know, every time she, you know, every time my wife says something, I don't just go, oh my God, you know. But being able to understand, oh, you know what, rather than just have the checkbox on who gives a shit, let's take that checkbox off and go, oh no, this is actually important. If I really pay attention and listen, this is important. Or something else she says, I go, eh, that's not that important. And sometimes we have those discussions because the thing she thought was important and I didn't, I reacted like, okay, cool. And that wasn't good. And so we'll have those discussions. But now we're having a rational discussion about some sort of scale of this is cool, or I think this is important and I don't think this is important. And we can have that and it becomes rational.
And what were you going to say, Greg?
Well, actually, that was kind of answering. So I was just going to clarify, like, so in a way that it worked, you have actually changed because of your wife's suggestions, if you will. You've actually like, now I listen to people maybe a little better and don't have my, what did you say? My instant checkoff box at who gives a shit. That's a nice thing. You know, that's a good character trait. And so I was also going to say that's one good thing also about living with someone for a long time, having a life partner, if you will, is I think it just keeps you normal. I'm all alone in the world. And like, sometimes I'm just like, I could spin off into some crazy direction, not have someone to check me at any given moment. I could start getting weirder and weirder, like some people do. I could
like
get
some
older
people
and weirder.
We know.
And I wouldn't have a wife to be like, honey, come on. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, you're right, hon. I'm getting a little obsessed about whatever. Whatever crazy thing I'm. And it's like, it's almost, I'm not saying you're going crazy, but like, you also have someone just to help you remember the norms of human behavior and social interaction. Like, you live with this person.
Yeah, that brings me to my second wife, actually. Sorry to interrupt. I just...
No, I was pretty much done. I was, yeah.
I just want to confirm what you're saying, but that does bring me to my second wife in terms of having somebody else to help you. So the second wife comes along when I'm not considering marrying anybody, actually not even considering dating. It was kind of a fluke how we got to know each other. But, you know, I decided that if I was going to be dating someone seriously, they need to know the bad things about me up front. So I started just using what I called my idiot filter whenever I did dating, which was to let people know my various different faults and flaws and things, and go, these are the positive things about me, and if you're willing to deal with those things, then okay, here we go. Well, she and I started dating. I'm like, there's some issues that I have. Apparently, I'm mean to people, and often I don't realize that I am. I don't know that I'm saying mean things. It's because it's so quick. I do it so matter-of-factly. Not even matter-of-factly. I do it as a knee-jerk reaction often. It's like I'm just trying to be fast whenever I talk to people. I don't spend as much time as people deserve mulling over the words that come out of their mouths so they can give them a full responsive answer.
If only you had this podcast back then, your potential dates could just listen to it and know all this.
Yeah, that, I don't know if
what's your life.
They would definitely not want to meet my friends after listening to this podcast.
Yes, that's true.
So with my current wife, you know, we had issues in the beginning where she dealt with it. I'm like, okay, well, I'm pretty sure this is one of the things that contributed to the end of my first marriage. I'm like, well, if you're willing, maybe you can help me out and point these things out as they happen. And if I'm doing this thing here, ask me this question. So throughout the course of our marriage, it's been, she's been helping me realize whenever I say mean things or vicious things, which I have a tendency to do sometimes, and I don't really want to cause that reaction to somebody, but I just kind of do it because it's kind of how I was raised. So these things are like ingrained within my psyche of how I respond to some people and how I react to some people, and it's through no fault of theirs. It's entirely me for whatever reason I'm doing it. And so it's been very helpful. I'll ask her to ask me a question like, are you being mean? After I say something, which is potentially mean. And so I have to then deliberate it and go, okay, well, I guess maybe I am being mean and maybe I should apologize. But the problem is that that's turned into is I go, oh yeah, I was being mean and I'll do it again. You know, I'll take the opportunity.
Stop me here. I'm gonna
take some friggin' enjoyment out of being mean to this person. I'm gonna continue, but you know, in reality, that's not really what I want. I don't really want to be mean to. I don't really want to cause people to rethink their way of thinking about themselves. Or here's an example. An example with you, Brendan, which I don't think you remember at all. This goes back to about 1992 when we were living together in Virginia. And we were having some conversation, and so this is something I have to apologize about, because weirdly enough, it's stuck with me all these years. And we're not having, it's not like a conversation about anything historic or profound. We're just talking about music, and it was like the advent of Green Day. You know, the band Green Day, we're like talking about Green Day and how, and they basically just annoyed me at the time. And you made the statement of, well, as a student of music in this very like authoritarian, somber tone, and I just started laughing because I thought it was one of the most ridiculous things for someone to say, because, you know, that's just how I felt. But it was unwarranted on my part to make, basically I was making fun of you for saying something like that, that you're a student of music. And anyway, so
especially because Brendan went to Juilliard, he was a student of music.
I have to quibble with your pronunciation of Juilliard.
Juilliard, sorry, Juilliard.
Well, that's fascinating. I mean, I don't totally remember that.
I don't know why you would. I mean, it's just something that stuck in my head because I realized it was a mean reaction of mine to what you said, and you didn't deserve it. And I could have said it in a different way. And I think the reason I'm bringing it up is because a few weeks ago, on a different episode, you said something very, very similar. You said, as a student of blah, 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 and I totally like brought that memory all the way back where I really wanted to do the same reaction to you and make fun
of
you again.
You know what? If you go back and listen to the tapes, you absolutely did.
I think you did, Matt, actually.
I remember you making the fucking comment, and I'm like, why are you being a dick about this? I'm just talking.
You almost thought you grew as a person. But
I thought
didn't.
I did.
Did
I guess I didn't. I thought I didn't do it.
No, you did.
I wasn't just a dick about something else.
You specifically made the joke about, oh, you're a student of, oh, it was film. You're a student of film. So that means film is teaching you something? No, you did. I don't remember which one it was, but you
roll
did.
The tape.
Well,
I'm
willing to believe him. I just think it's like, I think I did still grow. I wasn't as mean compared to what I did.
He didn't laugh at you as long
30 years ago.
Yeah, my character flaws, I gave this many more shits this time than I did the last time.
I got to say, though, sometimes I'm cruel just for the sake of telling a joke. Where I used to be more of a joker and always trying to make people laugh. And sometimes, you know, it's jokes are semi on the cusp of being cruel. You got to know your audience. And sometimes I go over just because I'm like, that's really funny. I'm going to say it and just see what happens, where the chips fall.
I think I'm a victim of that same
I think you do
motivation.
That with me. Sometimes.
Oh, not just you, like, Greg. Pretty much anyone in my sphere.
Yeah.
You know, or even somebody who's not even in my sphere. Yeah, and it's not a sane rationale. You know, it's not
a good thing, yeah.
No, it's not, because we should generally be polite and be nice to each other. And yeah, it's quote-unquote funny at the time, but it's not really funny. So tying all this back in together, and again, I'm sorry, Brendan, for the 30 years ago one and the recent one, and since you don't care, then I'll just keep doing it. Anyway.
Well, apologize for the one you're going to do in a month or two. You're probably going to do it again.
I'll do apologies for the years to come.
Here's the thing, Matt. This kind of ties it back to marriage. Not that we're married. But
we
you
seem
can
to
say
be.
That.
30
you
years.
Can say, I know. You can say that, and I can acknowledge that, but I know goddamn good and well you'll do it again. And what makes a relationship work, is knowing that and accepting that and going, you know what? He's acknowledged that that's a dick move, and he's trying to correct it. And if it happens again, you know.
That's why there are shelters for battered women.
I think it's also true.
Women for a second.
What's that? What did you say, Brendan?
He wants to talk about battered women for some reason.
Those are women who work in bakeries.
Yes.
Beer battered wives.
Right. Beer battered wives. Go ahead, Greg.
I was going to say that, like, I also think what makes you and Matt be friends is deep down, you know, like, Matt really cares about you and thinks the world of you. So, you know, it is just a Matt's goofing on you.
Speak
like
for
if you were a stranger.
Greg.
Yeah, whatever.
Put
and just like your
in
wife,
my mouth,
if you have a
bastard.
If you have a decent relationship with your wife, maybe you could say a cruel joke to her. She'll know that, like, oh, that's just my hubby being silly, and she knows you love her and she knows you care. So, you know, it's not the worst thing if you make a little sardonic comment here and there.
Actually, it took her a while to get used to my sense of humor in the early days because we're both from different environments. Like my first wife and I, she came from a very liberal, hippie, beatnik background, was raised like as a Buddhist. And I was raised in a Reformed Jewish family, but my father was military, and I, you know, I was a military brat, so I moved around all my life, so I had a more conservative upbringing, and so that's why before when I said we probably shouldn't have been married to begin with, we probably should have dated and learned certain things about our own personal philosophies, where we would have gone, oh, long run, yeah, this probably was not going to work out well, considering my major character flaws. Now, in this particular marriage, it's the other way around. I'm the more liberal of the two in this particular marriage, but she is really, really, really tolerant of my foibles. I don't know why, but she is. And so that's...
It's because of her religion.
She's gotten to be pretty much my guinea pig.
Tolerant.
She's like the guinea pig for my verbal abuse, essentially, so that I can work my way through it. She's accepted a lot of it, you know, which most sane people would not. You know, they would just kick me to the curb, as the first wife did. You know, but she's been incredibly helpful to me in changing those aspects of my personality. Now, I was never physically abusive, but, you know, I have to admit that I can be verbally abusive, and it's not okay for that to happen. And again,
I'm sure that
I've gotten much better at it over
the
years.
None of the listeners to the podcast would really understand what you're talking about right now, man.
I think Greg's sister would understand it. The one,
so let me ask you
the one who hates me.
Yes.
Just to clarify more from a point of whatever interest. So you divorced your first wife when you were whatever, mid late 30s.
Right.
And you were single for how long before you remarried? 5 years, 10 years?
It wasn't 10. I got remarried in 2000. I think I got remarried 2010. So it would have been about 6 years. Yeah.
6 years. Okay.
So I dated like 30 women in those 6 years.
The only reason I'm asking is, you know, kind of out of morbid curiosity, because, you know, when, you know, things in my marriage would go kind of like, you know, to the south or whatever, and I would go, oh, wow, you know, if this really went down, you know, I'd like play it out of my mind. What does this mean?
Yeah.
And I was of the same mind of you. It's like, you know, because this would have been, let's call it, I would have been early 40s, early 40s when it kind of got really rocky. And I started thinking, I will never marry again. I will not date. I don't care. I'm going to be Greg. I'm just going to go read comic books and play Dungeons and Dragons.
Play Dungeons and Dragons.
How dare you insinuate that?
But I was just like, fuck it. I will just go live in a, you know, by myself and do whatever I want to do and fuck women and I'm done. I had a wife for X amount of years and I had kids and I did the whole dad thing and I did the husband thing and now I'm done. So it's interesting. I couldn't ever see myself. And the reason I'm asking, or the reason I asked this, Matt, is I couldn't ever see myself if that did happen. I couldn't visualize myself ever getting back to dating or any of that. Not to say that I wouldn't have, but at the time when I was sort of tussling with it, I was like, no,
Well, I liked being with women. I liked the dating part. That was kind of fun for me. It was the marriage part I really didn't want to experience again. And it really wasn't until my current wife, she was the one who really wanted to get married. And I gave her so many reasons not to marry me. And I was like, what's going on here? I'm like, doesn't she understand that I'm not right for her? Doesn't she understand that this
is that why you grew the beard?
Like, is this a bad... No, she likes beards. I'm like, don't you understand this is a bad choice for you? And, you know, we would have these things where she would have some character trait that I didn't like. And so I'd point it out because at the point, I didn't care if somebody stayed or went. You know, that was mainly my point of view in dating. I had like a three-month lifespan for pretty much anybody I dated. They rarely lasted more than 3 months. Now, the woman I dated just prior to my wife... we went out for a year, and that was just a stupid mistake because I should have known she was evil, and I didn't really realize it till the end. So, but that being the case, still, you know, with my current wife, and she would change her behaviors that I didn't like. And I'm like, well, this is really freaking weird. I'm like, this is somebody who's actually changing the way they deal with things for me. That was highly unusual. You know, and I was like, wow, I mean, like, guess she, like, digs me or something. I'm like, why? Why would she? You know, these things didn't make any sense to me. And so, you know, somewhere along the line, I remember just having these conversations where she was, like, interested in getting married. I'm like, you know, I really have no desire to ever get married again, blah, blah, blah. You know, and then 1 week I was just having this, like, minor epiphany. And I asked her, I said, let me ask you this question. Like, what do you think? What are you going to get out of being married? What makes this good for you? And she listed this, and this. I can't remember what they were. And I said, well, you know, we could do all of that without ever getting married. And 2 days later, I proposed to her and flipped her out, you know, because she wasn't expecting it all, which is kind of my nature, too, is I like to do little surprises for people. They don't expect me to do something, I'll do something. And she said yes, and I went on. I guess we're going through with this. And, you know, now we've been together. I guess we've been together for like 11 years, been married for 10, and, you know, this, which is as long as my first one. And we've gotten through all the rocky parts. All the bad parts have been kind of done. So now it's kind of like, well, okay, I guess this is the long haul now.
You know? Right. Don't you think that...
Sniffing glue is tomorrow, though.
That sniffing glue would help. No,
it might help more.
That obviously, as an older person, or be more mature, whatever you want to call it, remarrying after a marriage, you have a certain better sense of the game. You know what I mean? Like, which unfortunately, the statistics, as I said at the beginning of the podcast, don't work out, but it should be. Logically, in my opinion, that if you were married and it didn't work out, and then you get remarried, you can look back at that past experience and go, okay, well, these are the things I didn't do right, or these are the things that she, you know, whatever. You can kind of rationally look at it and then go.
Yeah, like practice makes perfect.
Yeah, here's a better path forward. Unfortunately, what's weird is that statistically that's not the case.
Well, I think it's mainly because people are freaking different. I think everybody goes into a marriage, I think, with different expectations of the other person, like 90% of the time. You know, like one person's getting married for a different reason than the other person is getting married, and only those people really know what that reason is. And it's kind of like my philosophy that everybody's crazy to some degree or another. Everyone. I don't care who they are. They're nuts. And they've got some weird thought knocking around in their head that if it were finally to come out, a person would go, oh, that's what that person's like. Which so many people have experienced if they listen to this podcast about me, because Greg has certainly brought up plenty of those moments. But
but everyone knew that about me from the get-go. It's
not
like,
only about you,
kind of normal.
You brought up my comment.
Oh, I have.
That I've said.
But I'm also a weirdo, but I'm an obvious weirdo. I don't hide it. It's just like, yeah, this guy's a fucking weirdo.
Yeah, it's expected from you. Whereas, you know,
yeah, exactly.
Me, you make your comments about how I'm the drunkest person you know that's not drunk.
That's true. You do come up with some bon mots.
However, most of those things aren't, I'm not really being serious about. So, but still, you know, some people have these really crazy thoughts. And I think, you know, that 60% or that 70% of people who don't make it in their second and third marriages, I think it's a similar thing. They didn't really learn how to communicate and get to that nutty thought, you know, where the thing you go, oh, I need to get away from this quickly. You know, and it could be, you know, most of those people getting married for the third time, they could actually be serial killers or something. And, you know, they finally get found out about it. I think that's what it is. Everyone who's been married three or four times is actually a serial killer. And I think that's...
I honestly yes. think...
Statistics prove that.
They do. If you married yes. four, if you've had more than four marriages, you obviously are Look chopping people stats. Up and burying them under your house.
Look at the stats, man.
Yes.
Yeah, I think people that get married more than a couple of times obviously have a bunch of money.
No, they don't.
Oh, one of them has not a lot of money.
No, I think they have to poor. In order to survive that many goes, you know, getting together and separating. Now, my question is for Greg. Greg, so we've talked a lot about being married for a long time and
yeah.
Being married and divorced and remarrying. So my question for you is, you're 52, right?
Yeah, I'm almost 53 in a few days.
There you go. You answered the question. He's all good.
Good. So.
Yep, I'm 52.
And if would you? Move on.
That's a question you wanted to ask.
I'm not saying marriage. I'm not saying you got to go down to the courthouse and sign some paperwork.
Yeah.
But would you at this point consider, you know, getting together with some sort of life partner? For the last, you know, whatever, 30, 40 years of your life.
He would not have to now. Consider actually having sex with another person first.
Yeah. Because maybe I could define
Because he's been asexual for a number of years now.
Yeah, I don't even want to have sex. Like, even loose sex. I know it's fucking weird to say out loud, isn't it? But you know, like, having said all this and how I feel now, I know it's probably a phase. I mean, unless I'm a really fucked up person, but, like,
wait, unless, I know I can meet unless, a woman, unless,
you unless, know. Unless it's more fucked up than any of us can imagine, than thought. But I know tomorrow I could meet a woman and all of these thoughts will go out the window and I'll be like, this makes total sense. That's how love is. I mean, like Matt, when he was done with his first wife, this happened so many times. I've known so many guys who got their heart broken, like, I'll never love again. Fuck. They meet someone a week later and they forgot all about their old lover and they're just like, this is great. That's what love is like. And so,
well, for me,
I'm
it wasn't
sure...
about forgetting the first one. It was more like I was still pining for her or anything. It was for me, it was just I just didn't want to go through it again.
Yeah, and you were just pretty much in that mode in that time of your life. You were just like, fuck marriage, I'm gonna fight against it. Yeah. And whatever, I'm even beyond that where I don't even want to date women. But I know that could change any day if it's some woman I meet. I mean, that's love is crazy. You know?
Well, let me ask you a question to kind of sum up our whole conversation here, which is marriage still useful in this day and age?
What about like just saying...
Is it necessary?
I know it's an odious term, but like life partnership or whatever, having a significant other like for
Well, I'm
forever.
Talking about the institution of marriage. Is it still... viable? Is
the actual
worth?
Like formal institution of getting the documents?
Yes.
I don't think I never thought that was useful.
The blood test,
that was always,
you know, all
silly.
That stuff.
Yeah, I never thought that was useful. It doesn't matter if you're actually married or you just dedicate your lives to each other. Like, I found the person I want to spend the rest of my life with. Who
what
gives
do you
a
think?
Shit if you got married? Who
what
cares?
Do you think, Brandon?
Well, first off, just from a science perspective, the blood test is kind of important if you plan on having kids.
No, that is important. Sorry. That is an important part of the process. But signing some documents or whatever.
But beyond that, beyond the actual blood test and making sure you're not marrying your cousin or something, the paperwork of marriage is unimportant. And I think that kids, you know, young adults – today are seeing that more and more. But I think there is something to be said for, especially if you're having kids and that's part of your plan, whatever. Having somebody there to raise those kids and provide that sort of stability, I think that is an important institution. And I think that mom and dad need to suck it up relative to their own emotional needs from time to time in order for the greater good.
Yeah. I think some people shouldn't stay married. I think some people should be apart because they're violent or detrimental.
Yeah, they're just hurting the kids.
This is not to say you should stay with somebody who's abusive or a complete asshole, but I think that a vast majority of divorces are not based on the fact that Bob is beating Susie.
I think they're based upon people being incapable of knowing how to deal with the other person or just looking for the easy out. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, okay, well, you know, I can't take this anymore. I'm not going to try and fix it. So I have other things that I want to do. And
do you think it's valid, though, guys, to just divorce if, like, hey, I just fell in love with this person? I think that happens all the time.
I think people, that's a silly excuse for people to say they fall out of love.
No, you can fall out of love.
Well, you know, I think falling in love is legitimate either. But the point is love is a created thing. It's something that you choose to feel towards somebody else. Other than that, it's just love or lust or obsession, right? Love is something that grows and you create on it. You make it stronger. You don't fall out of love. You deliberately choose not to love, is my opinion on that.
I don't believe that. Sorry,
Greg. My further clarification on that point is if the two of you decide that you've fallen out of love with each other and you don't have kids, yes, please divorce now.
No, I've known some couples who didn't love each other, they divorced, but they didn't hate each other and they still raised their kids pretty well, even though they weren't living together, dating other people. They still were just great parents, and for their kids. The kids grew up pretty damn good. I'm old enough where I've seen these kids.
Well, I'm not talking about the kids. I'm talking about the couples themselves. You know,
I know them.
They got along. You don't know them as well as they know them.
All I know is that the kids ended up okay. So
that's totally fine. I guess because of my perspective, I'm the hardliner here. I mean, I know Mac's kids are good kids and Mac got divorced and, you know, it all worked out. I'm not to say that, you know, kids are doomed or people shouldn't divorce at all. I'm just saying if you can work it out, you should try. If you can't, fine. And then be like, you know, Matt and his ex-wife and be good friends and work together and you can do that too.
Yeah, I wouldn't say we're good friends. I'd say we're friendly.
They're civil.
Yes.
They're civil.
We don't yell at each other anymore. Let's put it that way. All right, on to the pizza fund. Pizza fund is here.
Wait, I want to say one more thing about divorce.
All right, go ahead, Greg. One more time.
Want to say, since divorce has become more basically acceptable, it wasn't acceptable, like people just stayed together even though they were miserable for the rest of their lives. And I got to say there's something to be said for, like, you got one life and – just because somebody says, oh, divorce is shameful, you got to stay with this bad choice you made when you were 18 forever. That's pretty fucking sad. And I kind of like the fact
basically stating that they're married, but I'm talking about getting married at all, not staying married.
Yeah. But I thought we were talking about divorce and marriage too.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, we had kind of gotten through that point already. Anyway.
Okay.
Pizza fun.
Pizza fun.
Pizza.
The important things. Let's talk about something important.
Exactly. So far, we have raised, and drum roll, please. Except the lip roll. We have raised $3.91.
That's a huge leap, huh?
I think we were at $2.91 last week.
Yeah, isn't that the biggest jump?
That's like nearly a buck in a week. That's highly unusual. So, and going into analytics, where's my information? All right, I'm just going to go into the analytics. So we've got more American listeners now than other countries, like a lot more now. We were at 82% American. We were like at 71 or 75% before. France has dipped down to 14%. All of our bad French imitations, we dropped the French vote. Still have 1% in Ireland, so that one person in Ireland, if it's an actual person, I was listening. And again, still less than 1%, Canada, Ukraine, Nigeria, United Kingdom, and Germany. So strange. I don't understand that.
I want to just reach out to our Nigerian listener.
Yes.
I feel you. Please reach out to us. Send me some sort of scammy email about how you're the prince or something. I don't know. I'm willing to listen.
And give you money.
So our last episode, School Subjects on Trial, has gotten as many plays as the previous episode. It's gotten 32 plays in a week, whereas our 10th client, which is Diets and Their Bastard Children, has also gotten 32 plays. And the client before that, Vacations for NFO, has gotten 33. So our current, our last week's one is doing, has gotten the best amount of play, I think, than all the episodes in the first week.
So next week's topic will be school subjects.
So school return, subjects the return. Again.
It kind of goes to Khan. It kind of goes to say that because we made like a buck.
Yeah.
Between now and then.
Yeah, there's a huge spike in the statistic. I'll show you the 3-month jump if you guys can see the statistic at all.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's so good. that huge spike was this past week.
Please tune in next week for the school board of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker, where we will discuss education.
We'll only be discussing school subjects. But our first episode is still the one with the most plays, which is Favorite Ethnic Foods at 53. It's moved, doesn't move much these days, but it still moves occasionally. Idiocracy is now is second. That was our fourth client. And that had 46 plays. So some people seem to be listening. I know that one person that Greg and I mutually know said that she's gotten through all of her episodes and now she's like addicted to the podcast. So it goes to show that we have one person that we have actually one fan. And their main
and
thing
what is that? What is her name?
Her name is Paula.
Paula?
Yes. If you want to say hi to Paula, say hi to Paula.
Paula,
hi, Paula.
We love you.
Yes.
I don't even know who you are. I think these two guys know you, but
yeah, we know her.
You.
We definitely know her.
I love you, Paula. Come to Florida.
She has stated that she thought you were a little too right wing in the beginning. She was happy to see that you've kind of bent a little bit along the way.
Well, Given the audience, I am probably the most right-wing person here. But I guarantee you that in Florida, they're burning crosses in my front yard and calling me a leftist Antifa asshole. Believe me.
Well, Brendan doesn't drink kombucha, so he's a right. suspect to me.
Well, I don't drink kombucha either. Why would anybody?
What?
Why would anybody drink that stuff? Fermented tea?
Do I even know you guys? What kind of podcast am I on?
Greg, when's the last time you drank kombucha?
I'm drinking it right now with my bourbon.
I'm drinking bourbon and kombucha.
Bourbon no, and I kombucha? Don't Is that a drink? What is that called?
It's called death.
It's called a diuretic.
Rusty Antifa?
It's a rusty testicle is what it's called.
It's called poor man's epicat.
All right. Well, that being said, let's wrap this sucker up. Anybody have a pithy comment, something profound they want to end the episode with? Anything new?
Astoria's burning.
Astoria is burning? This has been the Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker Computer Telecast, where any advice has been designed purely for amusement and deep-sea diving. Please take a candy on your way out, pet the lion tamer, and subscribe to this computer telecast if you know it's good for you. The Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker deny all culpability in today's events and are not to be confused with real law offices that have a secretary and books and stuff. Thank you all. Have a good day.